This week's Crossman Conversation is brought to you by Meeks Capital, Frontier Partners, First Horizon Bank, and Crossman Career Builders.
The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
The Crossman Conversation is hosted by John Crossman. John's heart is to see our community of leaders unite around what we have in common. John will be joined by political leaders, religious leaders, as well as activists making a difference in our nation. Here is your host for the Crossman Conversation, John Crossman.
Hello, this is John Crossman, and welcome to the Crossman Conversation. Mike.
Yeah, man.
I got a quick story for you. I have to tell you this.
I am not surprised.
I have a story for you. So, you know, my dad was a pastor and civil rights leader, and I really am into that, you know, area. I like it. I enjoy it. And after Mr. Floyd was murdered and we had all that kind of, almost said the word renaissance into having these conversations, right? Like, it's not like they weren't happening, but just getting that out there. And there's some good stuff helping with that,
right? It certainly brought it more to the forefront.
Right, which is good. But I had twice in our community in Central Florida within the last 18 months, I got contacted by a group and they're like, we're going to do this unity event. We're going to bring people together. And so yeah, I'm honored. Yeah, they reach out to me, different leaders, you know. And so then I got like on a Zoom call with a group and I was like, they're talking about all the different groups being included. And I said, hey, just question, are Trump supporters included? And I was told very sharply, absolutely not. And so I was like, huh, that doesn't seem right. And so then like almost a year later, another group contacted me and it was again, that same kind of pitch of like, like if you were sitting next to me, you'd poke me like, Crossman, this is your kind of bag. This is the stuff you'd like. And I'd say, oh, yeah, it is. And then they had Q&A. And the first thing I said was, hey, are Trump supporters included in this? No.
So much for unity.
Yeah, right. Like, do we need a dictionary to look through? So, you know, I'm sensitive to that subject. And it's not that I'm this big Trump guy. I'm just more of a, I really am a unity guy. I really am. Let's get people together and have a hard conversation. But if you take one group of people and you marginalize them and you don't let them in the room, you're not solving problems. You're creating more division, right?
Yeah.
Not like
all right. Keeping the division alive.
Exactly. So I got asked, I was honored, got asked by Mayor Dyer in the city of Orlando to be a part of this thing where they were having hard conversations and breaking down and facilitating. And so I'm in it, and I had some fear. I actually said that to some of the city officials. I'm like, guys, like, I just want to make sure all voices really included. And so the topic that I was involved in was inequalities, and a lot of it had to do with racial inequities and things like that. And so I met this woman, and I was blown away by her because she's so smart, and she's so cool. And she really is about unity, and she really is about hard conversation. You could really talk to her about anything. And she has an HR background, which means she's got the coolest stories. And she's our guest today. That's our guest today.
All right.
It's Deloria Nelson Street, and she's here with us. So thank you for being here with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
So cool. When you have HBCU connections.
Absolutely.
We'll come back to that in a second.
Okay.
And I want to say, and your company is Authentic Culture Engagement Solutions. I get it right?
Yes, sir.
We're going to call it ACE.
Absolutely.
I'm dyslexic and I have all kinds of problems. Make it easier for me. So thank you for being here. Thank
sure.
you for being here. So let's start off with, why don't you respond to what I just said? Like, you know, some people say they want to have unique conversations, but they really don't. They want to have kind of divisive conversations. So when somebody asks you like, hey, I want to have a hard conversation. I'm trying to bring people together. This is kind of your world, right?
It is.
So how do you do that? How do we have a hard conversation? How do we talk about dogs and cats living together? Or how do we like Patriot fans? I mean, any number of hard conversations. How do we do it?
Yeah, hard conversations are hard, literally.
Right, right.
I mean, and I think from an inclusion and diversity perspective, it makes sense. And we know we have to get there, but there's so much clutter and distortion in the background.
Mm.
And so I just recently did a book study on inclusive conversations, and it was amazing because a lot of it is not just the conversation, but setting the conditions for the conversation and understanding the backstory, the historic marginalization. All of those come to play because even though people are sitting down as equals, there's a lot of unconscious bias and fears and things that make it hard sometimes to invite everybody into the room, although the reality is we should.
Right. And walk me through that. I mean, you must, you know, you Well, let's talk about your background. You had a really solid family life growing up, and you went to a great HBCU. You really you did. Now, tell us, which college did you go to?
Clark Atlanta University, which is Methodist, and
you know
something about that,
I do know a little. I do speak fluent Methodist, so that's good. So you had a strong, you have a pillar inside. You have a strong core that kind of keeps you going.
I do.
And so that college experience and your family, when it launched you into the world and you had to deal with some craziness, you were able to kind of pull back on that. And that maybe gave you a bit of perspective. Is that correct?
It did. And I just have always been, I guess, the mediator of in my family and just in communities, and always really wanted to understand the why. So even if I didn't agree, I was always the person that really wanted to hear all of the sides and all of the why.
So I have to think that in those scenarios, there's a lot of pain. You're looking at people in pain, right? Like, so somebody might be, just to use some vernacular today, like they might be a very woke person and like they want to use woke language and like, Mike, you don't understand, you know, like, and they might beat on Mike. But then, you know, Mike might feel like, man, he might have a little bit of, I'm picking on you, Mike, because you're sitting next to me. I don't mean.
I take it. You know, bring it on, John.
I don't mean it. I'm not literally, you know. But like, he might feel like, well, gosh, I won't pick on Mike. I'll talk to about a friend of mine who's in his 70s, career military.
Sure.
And he has all these wonderful memories of a military institution that he was trained at and spent time at, and they're changing the name.
Right.
And it's very hurtful to him. Right. And so I have to imagine that, like, you're dealing with, you might find yourself where you're dealing with two emotional burn victims. Is that accurate?
It is.
Yeah. And so you're trying to figure out, like, hey, you know, you might in your head be like, well, gosh, we really should change the name of that building or that school. And you might lean that way. I'm not trying to put that on you. But then at the same time, you're really trying to hear this other person who has some real pain of why they want it to say. So how do you pull that off? How are you able to, you got to listen to both and have compassion for both. And maybe you have to have education on both, right?
Sure.
Right?
Sure. You do. And I think some of it is listening to understand and not to respond, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of understanding the impact and the hurtful nature of some of the names of places that have a Confederate, let's just keep it real, because that's why we're here, of background that reignites pain and like almost PTSD, but maybe to the other person, based on their frame of reference and their lived experience, had a very positive piece. So I think you listen to both, but some of the conditions would be understanding power, understanding the historic marginalization, and understanding the evolution in the pain, right? I don't think those come out with things. No one ever is happy, but I think as long as you understand the why and respect, even if you don't agree, the other thing we talk about a lot in these conversations, in addition to empathy, is grace and forgiveness, right? Giving people grace because we all, I think, should have it, and forgiveness because a lot of times they don't know. So they say, when you know better, you do better. But, you know, just even language, I don't want to get into all of it, but there's so many things and bias that are a part of us that we've all done and said, and we didn't realize it. But I think once you know, then I think there's an acknowledgement that happens, as opposed to defensiveness. And that's how sometimes the wheels fall off.
Well, you know, if I got run over by a car and I'm lying in the street, my body's all mangled, and I think, how am I going to get through this? You know, well, how am I going to get through that is like, there's some great EMTs are going to come help me, and some great doctors and nurses and surgeons and physical therapists. Like, and so you really occupy that space in an emotional way. Right. And you probably call on pastors and counselors and other people to help you reinforce if a person's really wanting to try to address it. So, since you brought up the Confederacy, let's go there.
Bring it on.
So one of the things, and I, just so you know this, I have more like a context of history. I'm like a lover of history. And so what I've reflected on is, I think that, you know, probably in the years in the early 1900s, you had people in the South that maybe they lost a child in the war, or they lost a parent or an uncle or whoever. And so them wanting to erect a statue in memory, that may have been part of their healing journey that they needed at that time. I look at it as, well, and that may have been true, well, maybe the healing journey today is to take the statue down. So in my brain, I'm like, I can see that it maybe had a purpose at a point in time.
Right.
And now here it has a different purpose. And it doesn't mean destroy it, and it could be moved to a museum. but it's like, hey, as a society, we're trying to acknowledge pain. Different people change different seasons. Did I get that right? Do you feel like
I think
that,
so.
That
you're trying to, I'd say, right the wrongs of the past, but understand as we've evolved, if it made sense maybe back then, but it doesn't now. And so, yeah, you don't have to burn it down, but it shouldn't be, in my perspective, at schools or other things when it's paying homage to a very painful time when people were certainly
sure.
marginalized.
Well, I'll go a little different direction. My daughters and I like to watch films, historic films, not historic, but, you know, famous films. Like, we went through a season where we watched a lot of Alfred Hitchcock films and musicals, things like that, and we like to talk about them. So as I've gotten older, I've expanded some of the things to watch. So one weekend we watched, it was Chinatown, and then we watched The Philadelphia Story, the original one. And they're both like super famous films. Here's one thing both films have in common. In both films, the lead male character punches the lead female character in the face. Hmm. And I mean, we're watching, they were like mortified, right? And I actually posted something on Facebook where I was like, hey, I know we acknowledge these as like top 100. Both of them are ranked top 100 films ever made by the American Film Institute or whatever. But like, dude, straight up, the women are getting
pretty violent, eh?
It's pretty, well, and like, that's not okay, right? Like, that's super, like, that's assault, you know? And of course, I had some people get mad at me, like you're saying, oh, hey, like, don't watch the films or short films. I'm not saying that. What I am saying, though, is like, it's not something that we would be okay with today.
Absolutely.
So you're trying to have that balance of acknowledging history and totality of history and also where we are in the healing process now.
Absolutely.
Makes sense?
It does.
Okay. We're going to take a little break. Gloria, you're so cool. Ace, you're full of wisdom. We'll come back and keep going on these hard topics.
Sounds good.
It's said that it's not how much money you make, it's how much you keep and use to plan for your future. Nathan Meeks, principal at Meeks Capital, combines leading investment techniques with modern financial planning software to be the resource you turn to for clear, objective, and sound financial advice. For a no-obligation consultation, call Nathan at 407-494-5439 or visit meekscapital.com.
A lifetime of hard work. Children laughing in the kitchen. Family photos on a restaurant wall. A legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation. Like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Are you willing to serve communities in crisis around the world? To people who are impoverished, oppressed, and persecuted? Frontier Partners International offers mission opportunities in areas least served to meet the needs of the helpless, the hapless, and hopeless. To learn how you can be a partner of this frontline ministry with your time, talent, or treasure, visit frontier-partners.org. That's frontier-partners.org.
Here's a call to those who want to make an impact on their company, their community, or who possess a desire to make the world a better place. Crossman Career Builders provides the tools and resources for you or your company to make a difference on some of the toughest issues that we all face. Crossman Career Builders partners with CEOs, politicians, and pastors seeking to address problems of racism, mental health, addiction, justice, and suicide. CrossmanCB.com.
Once again, here is John Crossman.
Okay, Deloria, I want to hit you with two big things I want to talk about. And you're so smart and wise. I have 100 things. I have to narrow it down. It's so hard. It's hard.
All right.
So I want to say something churchy, if that's okay.
That's
fine. Is that okay? Are you okay
Absolutely.
With that?
Absolutely.
All right. So Mike and I were just talking about this. I refer to Joseph in the Old Testament as the CEO of the Old Testament. I really like, he was a visionary and he was a dreamer. And one of the things I like to reflect on is that at the end of his life, at his funeral, the Bible says, you know, basically his friends and family were there and the Egyptians were there, right? And so I always like to think, like, gosh, like, who's coming to my funeral? So to him, he had people from a different country, people of a different ethnicity, people of different race, people of different religion came to his funeral, right? He worked with them. He lived right. with them. He did life with them. And so maybe in a New Testament thing I would say is like, well, the Samaritans come to my funeral, right? So while, you know, I'm a conservative guy in lots of ways, I want to be somebody that's empathetic and listening. And I feel like being a person of faith, that people who are even don't agree with me would still be in relationship. Respond to that. How does that fit in the context of what you do when we're talking
about? It does. I had a session recently, Black Boardroom Leadership Institute, which is something that's sponsored by the Orlando Economic Partnership. And I encouraged of the participants to build their personal inclusion action plan. And it starts by saying, who's in your circle? Right? Because a lot of what we're trying to accomplish relative to all of the inclusive conversations and not being biased, it doesn't happen when you stay in silos. And so if we tell ourselves the truth, a lot of times our circle looks very much and thinks very much like we do. And so I encourage people to expand that circle, because the more you interact with, eat with, spend time with, love on people that are different, the more you understand, respect, and it reduces the bias, because you don't have to depend on what you've heard. You know, in fact, that that relationship with that person is solid and they're a good person.
You know, what's funny is, like, when I hear you say that, I'm a devout capitalist. Okay. Like I believe in profitability and having healthy businesses. Everything you said totally matches with that, right? Like if you're a person of faith, everything you said matches. If you're a person that is an entrepreneur and was trying to make money, it matches. Like it matches so well. And I'm trying to think where it doesn't match. It doesn't match when we're insecure or we're fear-based or we're about power. And I'm trying to gain this power and I don't want to lose any power. And if I, you know, in a silly way, it's like, so I went to Florida State and I was an athlete there and I'm a big Florida State guy, but I endowed a scholarship at UF to benefit undergrads from HBCUs.
Right.
And I had Seminoles get mad at me. And I had Gators get mad at me. You know, it's sort of funny how some people, they just think in a very...
But the Rattlers were happy.
Well, the Rattlers were happy. But you know what? I just did a fundraiser for the Wildcats.
Whoop, whoop. Hail, yeah. Wildcats.
That's right.
My son is a freshman.
I know.
He just finished his first year with the 3.75.
Of course he did. Of course he did. We love him, right?
Oh, yeah.
And here's the thing. Rattlers cheered me on, right? As they should, right? And so we have to try to... Maybe I guess what I'm trying to say is, if we find ourselves trying to wall off people, maybe try to think through why we're trying to wall off people. Maybe because, you know, and being honest, are we trying to gain power? Are we afraid?
It's usually fear and fragility. It's usually power. And the fear is so not real, but it feels real.
Yeah.
Right. When you think about loss. And so a lot of times as I talk to people, I don't talk about reparations and redistribution. Mm-hmm. I talk about growth and expansion, right? Because if we do the right thing relative to inclusion and have diverse people running things and in concert, we will improve innovation, problem solving. And the bottom line, there's lots of studies that show that. But I think it's the fear of I'm going to be replaced or I'm going to be kicked out or maybe I lose power. But that's not what it's about. It's about everyone coming together using what they have, God-given talents, to expand and grow. And once it grows, then there's more for everybody to gain.
That's awesome. It's awesome. So let me ask you, this is my big question for you.
Okay. This is a big one.
But we could talk more about your freshman son. But don't worry, this is a big question. So I want you to visualize something with me.
Okay.
Visualize you and I are sitting together and we're in a kind of a smaller room, but there's like 50, 60 CEOs that you and I are talking to. And I'm doing an interview with you. And all these CEOs are white males, but they're the good ones. Okay. They're the good ones, right?
Whatever that means.
Whatever that means. Well, I mean, like they're
no, I understand what you're saying.
Meaning like, cause this is my world, you know,
right.
Like I always tell people, like I'm in predominantly conservative, Christian, Republican kind of worlds. I never hear racist things. I mean, maybe people just don't say them around me, but I don't hear it. And I want to help, right?
Right?
So if I was interviewing just in this little kind of group and they were like, hey, we want to help. And so I said, hey, what do they need to hear? If they're good dudes, good Christian dudes, they look at some of this crazy stuff and they're like, gosh, we want to help. What would you tell them to do? What should they do?
I think the first thing they should do is to look at their circle, right? Mm-hmm. And if their circle is people that look just like them, how can they expand their circle, right? How can they create a pipeline for others to have the opportunity to sit in those seats, to be CEOs. Some of what you've said is the scholarship endowment is one way, because education is one way. Go to some of these business schools and have conversations. Develop relationships where you can pour into people so that that room eventually looks different. Because as much as there aren't racist things being said, and it may not be intent, sometimes the intent is not there, but the impact is the same, right? So I think one of the disconnects is people stay in their own head with their intent, which is true. You know, I'm a good Christian person. I would never hurt anybody. But the impact of selection or who they're around means people that are marginalized stay marginalized. So I don't question the intent, but the impact is what we need to make a difference in.
That's really powerful. And when I think marginalized, one of the things that jumps out to me is that there's a lot of white people that are marginalized.
Oh, yeah. Privilege privilege can be different. It can be racial. It can be economic. It can be educational. So absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. So one last side question with that, because this really hit me as you were explaining all that. So when I heard you answer that, part of it could be like, let's just say Mike and I are out there recruiting and we're like, oh man, we're going to recruit and hire a new tech person here. And maybe we always think about going to UF, and you would say, hey, John, why don't you go to UF, but also go to Valencia, go to FAMU, go to Bethune-Cookman.
Absolutely.
And so then like we're seeing all kinds of button-up kids trying to get a job. So that's part of it. The other part, this is really my question, because I don't think you were saying this, but it hit me and I wanted to just see if this is okay with you, if you agree with this. Is it also like having humanity with my cashier at Publix or the person that's at Wawa? Or
it's how we treat the least of these. Amen.
Yeah. I always get Christmas gifts for the sanitation workers, and I always go out there and shake their hand, because I'm like, man, if they weren't here, we'd have a problem.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, other people don't need a gift at Christmas, but these, I mean, like, so is it both like, now, if you only did that, you may not end up hiring and making an impact in a position of power, right?
Right.
So is it both?
Of like, course it's both.
Intentional,
I mean,
it's
how you treat people that matters. But I do think we have to have a little more intentionality when it comes to recruiting, things of that nature, because we thought it was going to happen organically, but it never did. So definitely recruiting HBCUs, Hispanic serving institutions, women institutions. And then when you think about community college, that helps with the economic piece, right? Because everybody can't afford to go to a 4-year school.
Yeah. No, that's really, really great. It's really great. Well, I appreciate you so much. And people, if they were like, dude, I'm really struggling with this, either personally or their company, they could contact you. And this is a thing you do. You come in and help
absolutely
companies.
Absolutely. All the time.
And you've worked for some big name companies.
I have.
Can you drop a couple names?
Sure, sure. Charles Schwab and Walt Disney World.
Yeah, I'm familiar with both of those.
Absolutely.
I've heard of them. So you have like super, I mean, obviously we know you have a great academic ground, but you have wisdom on top of academia.
Oh, and stories, just like you said. I have some stories. I can't tell them all because my background is HR, but yeah. And it's just about being the guide. I think for me right now, I'm coaching some executives. It's some of the fear. And so for me, it's like, just tell me what you think. Helping people build their DEI, what's your why, is huge. And so I would be that confident to help guide you through this treacherous and sometimes tricky diversity journey, because it can be a challenge.
I had, after Mr. Floyd got murdered, I actually hired a black pastor. I paid him to come teach my Bible study, which was probably white men. And after a while, like, some of the guys started asking some harder questions, like about fatherlessness in the black community and things like that. And I think they were afraid to ask it, but like, we have to go there, right?
Right.
Or like, why do we even have black colleges? You know, I get that sometimes.
Sure.
People ask me that. But if somebody had some of those like really hard questions, like, what about black on black crime? What about this? Don't all lives matter? You're like, and again, if we go on Facebook and point there, it's not going to go well.
No.
Right. But they could say to you privately.
Oh, absolutely.
And they do. And then you can help them. You have compassion and empathy.
Absolutely.
And wisdom. And it's okay.
It's okay, because you have to build that authentic relationship. Cause if you do that, you can almost ask anybody anything, but understanding the fear and trying to help not resolve it, but say it's okay to not get it. And it's okay to make mistakes, you know, apologize, acknowledge, keep learning, because we all are. And we learn from each other. It's not one way.
So you create a white CEO safe space.
Absolutely.
I was trying laughing as I said it, but that actually probably should be the title of this episode. But it's a skill set. It's like if they are like, hey, I want to acknowledge this, I want to tackle this, I want to do something about it, but I don't know how. It's like that one CEO that said, I can't get any diverse candidates. It's like he sat on his porch. I don't see any, you know, but there are out there. But
oh,
it's
absolutely.
Like it's stepping into
and
it.
And being intentional, but you have to feel safe, I think, to feel intentional.
That's awesome. Well, Delorious, thank you so much for being on here. You are so wise, and I could talk to you all day long. It's like you have so much to offer, and so blessings to your son. I hope you'll keep us posted on him.
I will.
He's really awesome wildcat, and I'm just grateful that you're in our community and all the wonderful things you're doing. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Absolutely. So thank you. This has been the Crossman Conversation, and as always, support your local HBCU.
This has been Crossman Conversation, produced by a Crossman Career Builders Mark Radio Production.